You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome in to a new episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790, and this is the show where we give you the inside scoop on everything going on with your favorite basketball team. Now, yesterday was Sunday. The Rockets improved to 3-0 in the preseason with a 123-117 win over the New Orleans Pelicans in China. If you want a full recap of that game, I encourage you guys to tune in to the prior episode that I taped on Sunday with Ali Bajani, a.k.a. the Rockets Insider. We did a good breakdown of who stood out in that game and really who stood out in the entire Rockets preseason thus far, in which they're 3-0. Now, the Rockets don't play again until Wednesday morning. Same opponent, the Pelicans, this time in Beijing rather than Shanghai. But because the Rockets are, of course, still in China, we're not going to hear a lot in between games because, you know what? Myself and most of the other reporters, well, we don't have the budget to go to China for preseason games. So there's not a lot of media availabilities, not a lot we're going to hear until the game itself on Wednesday morning. And so after that, yeah, we'll have our usual post-game show, and I'll be able to tell you guys, especially those of you who couldn't watch, what to take out of Wednesday morning's game. But until then, I want to focus on a few other items away from the basketball court. And when you think Houston Rockets and away from the basketball court, the first name that comes to mind, unfortunately, is Sergio Yule. Now, I know some of you probably recoiled hearing me mention that name. He's, of course, been a Spanish League player for a long time. Rockets have held his rights since 2009, yet he has never made the jump to the NBA. And a lot of fans are frustrated with the constant tease, but it's certainly new information because Mark Stein of ESPN reported at the end of last week that the Rockets are indeed hopeful after this season that they will be able to finally convince Yule, now 28 years old, to come over stateside and join the Rockets alongside James Harden and with Mike D'Antoni as the coach. And for those of you who don't know his story, again, drafted in 2009 by the Denver Nuggets, the Rockets traded for his international rights on draft night. Since then, he's played for Real Madrid. That's really the top team in the Spanish League. They have won the title the last 2 years, and Yule specifically has been Finals MVP in 2015 and 2016. So he's certainly ready as far as comparisons. A lot of folks would compare him to maybe a poor man's Goran Dragic or Manu Ginobili. Now, I don't want to say he's going to be at that level. That's why I say poor man. Certainly, a lot of things would have to go right in his transition for him to reach the level of those players. But what I mean by that, he's a combo guard. He excels in the pick and roll. He's a good shooter, especially when he's set. He has a very quick release. Incredibly smart. Very competitive, feisty. God, I mean, you could tell when his team Real Madrid played the Oklahoma City Thunder in the preseason last week, part of the NBA's global games over in Spain. He relished the opportunity, hit buzzer beaters in the second, third, and fourth quarters, the last of which sent the game to overtime, where Real Madrid went on to beat the Thunder, and you could see his competitive fire. He wanted to win that game. He wanted to show that he belonged, and, you know, for one night, he did, but bigger picture, the way he can show that he belongs is by, you know, coming to the NBA, the world's best basketball league, and becoming a good player. And I should say that it's not just an empty media report of his potential interest in the Rockets, or I should say the Rockets' interest in him. Daryl Morey, the Rockets GM, tweeted, you know, at his Twitter handle with about 50 million exclamation points after the buzzer beater that sent it to overtime. So Daryl Morey certainly has not given up on the dream of acquiring Yule to go. And really, it shouldn't be called a dream. It's realistic because since the Rockets hold his international rights, no other NBA teams are in the picture. It's either Real Madrid or the Rockets. And at some point, the challenge of the Spanish League may become a little bit too easy for him. That's the hope. Now, I know a lot of people initially last week were skeptical because there was a report in the Spanish media that his buyout had just soared all the way to as much as $13 million. And Mark Stein of ESPN contradicts that. He says sources briefed in the specifics of his contract tell ESPN that the NBA buyout to free Yul from his contract is not nearly as onerous as the Spanish press reports suggest. It's manageable, in the words of one source, Stein reported. Now, because of that, an eventual jump to the NBA remains in play, Stein says, no matter how understandably skeptical basketball-loving Houstonians are by now when they hear Yul's name. And just like Mark, I understand your skepticism. However, I want to do this show to walk a few of you back from the ledge and explain why it might actually be manageable. First off, I want to touch on the Spanish media report. I absolutely believe Mark Stein over random reports in the Spanish press. That's not to take a shot at those reporters, but the big difference between NBA media and those overseas is in the quantity and the level of interest. There are some really good reporters. David Pick is a great international reporter, and a lot of people have been sharing his tweet today in which he said that Yul after Ronaldo is the star in Madrid. He's a basketball god. Being an NBA sidekick to James Harden in Houston, no thanks. And that's his opinion. He's not putting that on Yul. That's just David himself. But David, he is a very good journalist, but here's the problem with Spanish press. The interest in the Spanish leagues is nowhere near what it is in the NBA. And because of that lack of interest, it is not as monetarily beneficial to cover the Spanish league as it is the NBA. Thus, you don't have nearly the volume of reporters. What happens when you don't have the volume of reporters? The reports tend to get skewed to the perspective of the team. And you know what? Yul's Real Madrid, the team that owns his rights right now, you know what? Just like anybody, if you ask the Rockets, do you feel secure about James Harden? They'd say 100%, absolutely. Hell, if you had asked the Oklahoma City Thunder last year if they believed that Kevin Durant's future was secure, they'd say, yeah, absolutely, even though, of course, Durant was going to be a free agent and ultimately left. That's just what teams say when it's their franchise player. And in the NBA, there's always a healthy dose of skepticism because there's so much reporting. Yes, you know, the Rockets or the Thunder, in the example I was putting out, will put out their perspective and they'll tell the local reporters that. But you know what? The agents, people around the league, they'll hear other things. And there are so many people located everywhere that invariably every perspective gets out. And that has a ripple effect all the way back to the original source, because those Oklahoma City beat writers expect that blowback, then you know what? They're not just going to take the team's word at face value. They're going to check that with a source they have in the agent community, maybe with another team, maybe with the league office. And the process just gets a lot more thorough because there are so many journalists in the equation and everyone wants to get their side out because a story that's balanced to one side benefits no one. Well, it shouldn't say benefits no one, it benefits the team, but little for everybody else. So in Spain, you don't have nearly the volume of journalists, thus the information is going to be a lot more tilted in favor of the clubs themselves. That's not a shot at the journalists, that's just the way it is. There's also not as much money to go around for the players and the agents. Salaries are nowhere near as high. So whereas in the NBA, agents have an incentive to leak things and always play the leverage game, it's not nearly that cutthroat in Spain, so a lot more things are handled behind closed doors. Team puts out their spin, agent does his thing. You don't nearly have the level of vetting. So because of that, the stories you're out of there are going to be very biased towards the teams themselves. And so I would absolutely believe an NBA source over that of one in Spain. So yes, I believe that Mark Stein's report is legit, that the Rockets are still hopeful that they can get him. Now, I know a lot of you guys are still skeptical, so I want to go back to the timeline. I know he's been property of the Rockets in terms of international rights since 2009. However, Sergio Yul was never supposed to be an immediate impact player. When the Rockets traded for those rights, they knew this was at least a 3 to 4 year project at a minimum. In fact, when they drafted him, he had yet to play even average 20 minutes a game for Real Madrid. And as recently as the 2011-2012 season, he only played 22 minutes a game. So again, this is not a situation like when the Grizzlies drafted Pau Gasol third overall and then he immediately came over. The Rockets knew this was a project. In fact, as recently as I was reading a report from Dave Hardesty at Clutch Fans in 2012. The Rockets said the earliest they expected Yul would be the 2013-2014 season. So when you talk about the realistic timetable for when Yul could come over, and yes, the Rockets and Yul have spoken with one another throughout the process, this was never something that they have not tried this for 7 years. They really tried it for about three. And really, there was only one real window. Here's what's happened since 2013. That 2013-2014 season was the first real opportunity the Rockets had to really think about bringing him over. 2013, not at all an option because, you know what, the Rockets had cap space. That's when they signed Dwight Howard. Every bit of that went to Dwight. You know what, for Yule, it's a financial decision. He wants to get the best deal that he can, and if the Rockets are under the cap team, they don't even have their mid-level exception. So in terms of paying for his buyout, giving him the money, it was just not feasible if the Rockets are an under-the-cap team, as they were when they had to sign Dwight. The next year, same thing happened. They went under the cap, traded Jeremy Lin and Omer Asik to make room for Chris Bosh, which almost worked out, and then when it didn't, they still had to use that cap space to sign Trevor Ariza and start trying to build their team for what ended up being a Western Conference Finals run. Again, there was just no finances there. The only time that the Rockets did potentially have the finances and the need for him was the summer of 2015. And even then, it wasn't 100% clear-cut. The Rockets were going to... the rumor was they were going to offer the mid-level exception to Sergio Yule, but their first priority was going after LaMarcus Aldridge in free agency. And while a sign-and-trade was not completely impossible, the odds were that if Aldridge had picked the Rockets, they probably would have had to have gone under the cap to sign him straight up, because sign-and-trades don't really happen that much anymore. So, again, the Rockets, I doubt they even had a formal offer on the table to Yule. They had communicated interest, but it was still a little bit conditional on Aldridge. Now, even so, I've been told since that, yes, the Rockets did think that they could get him. They were a little shocked by his decision to stay in Spain and thought that there was a little bit of an about-face on the part of Sergio and his agent. But it's nothing drastic. As you can tell, the relationship between the two sides is still good. Morey remains in contact with him and his agent, still has optimism that he'll come over. Really, that was the only time, 2015, with the mid-level exception, they were rumored to maybe offer him 3 years, $17 million, which would be that MLE, that they could have gotten him. And for Yule, besides the normal reasons of, well, he wanted to stay in Spain because it's his home and because he's more comfortable with his role, the other thing, everybody in the world knew in 2015 that salaries were about to skyrocket in the 2016 and 2017 off seasons. So it may very well have been a financial consideration for him to delay his coming to the NBA until everyone had more money. And you know what? In the years ahead, it's not just going to be the salaries that continue to increase. The next collective bargaining agreement, which the NBA says is pretty close, there's been rumors that the international buyout figures for teams, what they're allowed to spend, are going to be bigger. So salaries are going to increase. The buyout pool is going to increase. There's a lot of potential upside financially to Yule for waiting, and that may have played a role as well. Now, this summer was an option, but again, under the cap, with the Rockets having a disastrous season like they did a year ago, 41-41, underachieving, the Rockets were not going to make Sergio Yule their prized acquisition. They did what they had to do to reestablish their credibility in the NBA, which is get two proven guys in Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, and use the remaining money to extend James Harden's contract an extra year. Sergio Yule, he's a great add-on to an already good team. He's not someone that you want to make the focal point of your franchise, or even a secondary one, before he's played a single game in the NBA. So for both sides, 2016 was not very realistic. For Yule's case, hell, I could see him having questions about the Rockets, having gone 41-41 and fired two coaches. Well, they didn't fire J.B. Bickerstaff. They just allowed his contract to expire. But the point is, 2016 did not make sense for either side. The only time that it made sense for both Yule and the Rockets to work together, and the only time that both sides were working together, and then it still didn't work out, was 2015. That's one rejection. People make it out to be this seven-year thing. No, both parties were well aware and working towards, you know, kind of a long-term goal, and there's only been one time when you could legitimately be disappointed that it didn't work out. So this isn't something where he said no over and over again. No, it's pretty much one time, and you know what? The Rockets are weighing their options for when they're going to make their next serious run, and it sounds like it could be next summer. Now, why would it be better then? Well, a couple of things. First off, Mike D'Antoni's system, tremendous for point guards. That's different than 2015. Back then, it was a much slower-paced system under Kevin McHale. Harden, it was unclear exactly what Harden's role was going to be. There was a lot of uncertainty then as far as where he would fit in the rotation. Whereas now, if the Rockets go out and have a good year this year, not just with Harden, but with guys like Beverly and Gordon having strong years in D'Antoni's system, all of a sudden it's going to be pretty easy to point to the Rockets and say, you know what, this is one of the most guard-friendly systems there is. So Mike D'Antoni, that's potentially a big selling point for Yule, who's really a combo guard. You know, he plays the point, but he's more or less interchangeable, especially if you technically have Harden running the point in Houston, assuming he continues to do well in that role this year. Another thing, NBA salaries growing much faster, as I said earlier, than salaries overseas. The explosion in player salaries, that's because of the new TV rights. It's nowhere near that in Spain. So when you look at the percentage increases in contracts, it's not level. So the gap between the Rockets and a Spanish league contract in 2015, it's going to be a lot more in 2017. And you know what? Real Madrid, there's a limit on what they can offer. You know, this is not the NBA. They're not going to pay him $50 million or something insane. Salaries do not work that way over there. There's just not the TV money. There's not the ticket revenue. It's not the same thing. So there is an upper bound. And you know what? The other thing, 2015, that was his first time to really break through and be the best player on a championship team. He's now won two titles in a row, been finals MVP twice, could very well make it three in a row this year. You know what? After 1 year, you could see players going back. I go back to, there's a great 30 for 30 at ESPN recently with the Florida Gators basketball team from 2006-2007 with Corey Brewer of the Rockets, Al Horford, and a few other NBA guys. And after they won that first title, they said, you know what? We enjoyed it so much. Let's stay in school. And they went back and they won another title. And then you know what? After year two, they could have stayed longer. Nope. It changed. It was different after year two than after year one. So just because he made the decision after 1 year does not mean he's going to make the same decision after every subsequent year. That's a little bit of a faulty chain of logic. The other thing, with Europeans, there is a big culture thing. And there is a very established history for reasons of culture and basketball, for players to come over later in careers. Luis Scola came over to the Rockets in, 2007, when he was 27 years old. Pablo Prigioni came to the NBA when he was 35. The most legendary international case is Arvydas Sabonis. He came over in the 90s when he was 30. So for a lot of reasons, yes, even though Yule is 28 years old now, yes, players this age do eventually come over. Other cases, in terms of writing him off because he didn't want to come before, besides international players, I'd point to Dwight Howard. I remember in 2012, there were so many Rockets fans that did not want the Rockets to trade for Dwight because of all the rumors that he did not want to re-sign here, which I absolutely believe. And you know what? A year later, circumstances changed, and not only was Dwight open to coming here, he chose to come here of his own volition as a free agent. So, no, I do not think that, well, because you'll did not decide on the Rockets in 2015 that that's the way it's going to be from here on out. Circumstances change. Maybe he's doesn't have anything more to prove in Madrid. Maybe he really likes Mike D'Antoni's system for it. Maybe the Rockets just have a really fun year scoring 120 points, and the narrative is that it's a really fun, great place to play. There are a lot of things that could change. So just because he did it 1 year, no, that does not mean it's going to happen every other year. And besides the international guys, Dwight Howard is proof that you don't write someone off on that. Now, really, a lot of this stuff has happened throughout the NBA. One big reason that I think fans aren't used to it is because you didn't hear about it until the age of social media. In the old days, really up until Twitter came around in 2008, we got story updates once a day. Your local TV guy, I'm going to say Mark Berman here in Fox because he's the best in Houston, you know, he'll do his nightly sportscast at 9:50. And then you'd have Jonathan Fagan with the Chronicle putting together his story for the next day's Houston Chronicle. And that would get filed and go online at about, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And you'd, you know, if you weren't savvy enough to refresh Cron Sports, then you'd see it in the Chronicle the next morning. But you didn't have these real-time updates, so you didn't know about the negotiations as they happened. You just heard the end game. And so, yeah, it was desensitized because, you know what, guys like Jonathan, he knows how these negotiations typically go, and all he's trying to report is the end result, who's going to be on the Houston Rockets in the next season. Whereas now that there's Twitter, everything is real time, and there are so many new reporters and sources of information because of Twitter as well. You hear about this stuff in real time. You hear about, well, Yul appears to be leaning towards the Rockets. Or wait, here's the sticking point. You know, it's kind of like the Chris Bosh thing. Remember the deadline day in 2014, or not deadline day, it was LeBron's decision day, when he made the big decision at about 11:15 in the morning, and from then, Bosh was leaning towards the Rockets, expected to make a decision too soon. Then by 1 o'clock, we heard that the Heat were making a last-ditch effort to make him stay, but it certainly seemed like the Rockets were still going to be the choice. And by 4:30, the tweet went out that just sent shockwaves through Houston from Woj that Bosh and the Heat were finalizing a deal for his return. Back in the day, you wouldn't hear about that stuff. You wouldn't feel so jilted because you didn't hear every step in the negotiation. You would just get your newspaper report or you'd hear your TV sportscast at night and you'd just hear the end result. You wouldn't hear every step. So again, this isn't unheard of for these rejections like what happened with Yul and the Rockets. You're just a lot more involved in the process now. And the difference, NBA executives are used to it. This is big business. It's cutthroat. I would say for Daryl Morey's perspective, if you want him to just take guys that magically want to be in Houston and build a contender with them, it's not going to happen. Even if you say build through the draft, that's only going to take you part of the way, and even then, you still got to convince players to stay eventually when they become free agents. The bottom line is there is going to be uncertainty. You're going to have to take risks. Sometimes players will tell you no. You just have to go out and make the best case you can, and you hope that over time, enough players are going to say yes in free agency and with these international negotiations, in the case of Yul, that eventually you win more than you lose. And I would say, you know, I'm not trying to talk down to you guys because I didn't understand this either until the more I got into covering the NBA and getting used to these situations. Because you know what? When you're in a lot of jobs or when you're growing up, you want to control what you can control. So there's this tendency, I feel like, among a lot of fans and viewers that if you're not sure that this guy's going to say yes, or especially if he's flaked on you before, you know what? Move on to someone else. There's plenty of fish in the sea. I think that's the way a lot of people look at it. And with the NBA, it doesn't really work that way because, again, it is so big business. It is so cutthroat. The difference between even the 90th percentile and, say, the 85th percentile is enormous. These true average and above average players in the NBA, there is such intense competition for them. There is such a small supply and huge demand that a lot of times you're going to get told no. So you have to desensitize yourself. You have to check your ego at the door because a lot of times, even if a guy tells you no, it's not because he doesn't like you. It's not because he's making some huge sweeping indictment that you're a terrible city or a terrible franchise. You know what? There's so many other organizations offering millions of dollars too. And in the case of Yul and Real Madrid, it's, you know, basically his home. There's a lot of factors and you just can't take it that personally. I know a lot of people, if you haven't been in big business, it's tough to think like that. But when you're dealing with players like truly elite NBA caliber players, there is so much demand that you have got to check your ego at the door and realize that sometimes they're going to choose other options because they have so many options. They are so much in pursuit. And actually, I would point out that in big business, a lot of times the deals that come close but don't happen, like what happened with Sergio Yul and the Rockets in 2015, that actually hints at a deal becoming more likely down the line. Just in the case of the Rockets, look at the three guys they brought in this summer. Nene, they went after in 2011, had the Pau Gasol trade not been rescinded for basketball reasons. They went after Ryan Anderson by trade several times, almost got it done, never did. They went after Eric Gordon when he was a free agent, I believe in 2012. They had a meeting set up. All of these guys, they were close to getting before and didn't. And you know what? We have talked to all of them and each said that those prior pursuits by the Rockets made them more comfortable. Because, and this happens a lot because of that huge interest. It's understandable if you don't take the first offer because everybody knows that players like this have so many options. And you know what? Just going through the process, I feel like some people see it as less likely when a when a player tells their team no, actually, in many times, if the negotiations get pretty far down the road, it can make them more likely. I'll point out the Chris Bosh thing. You know, the Rockets, of course, first went after Bosh in 2010 with the famous iPad presentation and everything else, and he chose the Heat then. And in 2014, they went after him again, and until the Heat panicked and gave him that fifth-year, you know, full five-year, $120 million deal at the last second, Bosh was absolutely going to choose the Rockets. And a big part of his comfort with the Rockets were the conversations they had in 2010 and how far down the road they went then. So again, I think there's a tendency to equate big business rejections to real-life rejections. And I just want to say that these are completely different scenarios. A lot of people, again, I'm not judging you because I used to think the same way until I got more exposed in bigger business and in these NBA situations. You know, I feel like an analogy a lot of people make, you know, you look at, say, a high school athlete, and maybe that high school athlete wants to, say, get a scholarship to UT, to the University of Texas, but for whatever reason, they just don't offer. And eventually, that guy gets a lot of other offers from, say, U of H, Rice, a few smaller schools proportionally. Now, U of H is actually better than Rice. I mean, better than Texas in some sports, but that's beside the point. But eventually, you know, there's a lot of places where that athlete can get a quality education. And these days, that athlete can be seen pretty easily. You know, no matter where you go, there's TV these days. And if it's good enough, if the athlete's good enough to potentially be a professional, then he'll get found anyway. And so I think there's this tendency to say, you know what? If you don't want me, I don't want you. And in life, I could understand that philosophy because usually, you know, as in the college analogy, there are a lot of fish in the sea. There are a lot of other options. And it's probably healthier to focus on controlling the things that you can control. I totally get that mindset. However, you have to check that at the door when you get to the very top of the line, which is what the NBA is, because these guys have so much talent, so many options. Every team is after them. It's never going to be easy to get a good player. And so, again, you just need to get desensitized. You check your ego at the door. And even if Yule has told you no in the past, if there's a reasonable chance you can get him, then you know what? You throw your hat back in the ring. And you just take calculated risk. That's what I would say. Is Yule going to come when the Rockets go after him next summer? I don't know that. But I think they have a decent shot because, again, no other NBA team is going to be in the mix. The Rockets hold his rights. I think at some point the salaries continue to grow in the NBA. It's going to be even more financially beneficial for him to leave. And at some point the competitive instinct will kick in as well because he's been finals MVP the last 2 years. They've won the last two Spanish League titles. At some point, if he wants to be as good as he clearly can be, then yes, the NBA should be in his future. Now, again, I want to talk people down a little bit. I know some people are going to be like, well, you spent an entire podcast talking about Sergio Yule. Is he a star? No, he's probably a role player. I mentioned Goran Dragic and Manu Ginobili. Those are absolute best cases. I said poor man's because he has some of those traits. You don't ever want to assume someone's going to convert that well. And when he comes over, you know, the earliest he'd be 29. He's best case at his peak. He might actually be losing a little bit athletically. I think expecting him to star is a little much. Best case, he can be a quality role player, either starting alongside James Harden or playing 20, 25 minutes a game off the bench. Very smart, athletic, can shoot the ball. Not talking star, but a good role player who has a lot of upside. And if you're the Rockets, that's the kind of calculated gamble that you want to take if you're an NBA franchise. So don't run from it. Don't roll your eyes and say, well, he's never going to come. At the very least, if you roll your eyes, if the entire Houston Rockets community says, screw it, throws up the middle fingers every time they hear Sergio Yule, what do you think that's going to do to his perception and to his trade value? At the very least, if there's some rumors about Yule making, you know, having eyes in the NBA, at the very least, then the Rockets can use his international rights as trade fodder next summer or at the deadline. There's just no reason to write him off unless you are so sensitive that you can't take the uncertainty or potentially being rejected again. And if that's the case, I would urge you to kind of reflect and realize, you know what, the NBA is big business. This is very different than most walks of life. And the other thing is that I think a lot of people just need to get more used to it. I think there's a lot of folks who are not used to the level of information we have now. It's a great thing that we know this much about NBA negotiations. I personally, I love it. It's given me kind of a career in this business reporting on it. But, you know, this did not exist 10 years ago. So it's not like this didn't happen. It's not like this is some unprecedented thing when someone like Yule or, you know, Dwight Howard in 2012 turns down the Rockets. You just probably didn't have that level of play-by-play 10, 20 years ago, so it doesn't feel like the, it doesn't feel normal, even though in reality it is. It's normal to Daryl Morey. He's turned the page. It's not normal to a lot of Rockets fans. I get that. All I'm trying to do is convince you that, you know what, it's not as odd as it might seem, and if the Rockets go after Sergio Yule next summer, it's because they do feel there is a reasonable probability of success that he can come over and potentially be a quality guard for this team. Anyway, that's enough Sergio Yule for one podcast. Again, this is 9 months away. It's October. The next time that we'll really enter into serious negotiations with him and hear about these talks will be next July. That's when cap room for the 2017-2018 season comes available to for the Rockets to use on Yule as well as other free agents. Yule's going to play out this season. And Real Madrid, the Rockets, are going to play out their season with the roster they have, and we'll see if he's still a fit in 9 months, but he easily could be. And I wanted to comment on that rumor because there has been a lot written about it lately, both from the Spanish press, which tried to say his buyout was too high to for the Rockets to reasonably get him to come over, and from Mark Stein of ESPN, who says, you know what, that those reports are exaggerated, that his buyout is manageable, and that the Rockets are hopeful that they can get him next season to come over. And really talking about it, because there's not a lot of other rumors going on with the Rockets, because, again, they're in China. So there's no media availability, there's no practices, we're just waiting on the next game, which is Wednesday morning against the Pelicans. And so in the interim, we've got these Yule rumors to go through, and I hope I gave you guys a good background on that. As far as the game, again, Wednesday morning, we'll have a full post-game show on that, so stay tuned to Locked On Rockets in the days ahead for that. Also, might have a feature guest on KJ McDaniels Tuesday or Thursday. I'm still trying to line that up, so keep your eyes peeled for that, but certainly the post-game in a couple of days. I urge you to continue to tune in, and if you haven't heard the post-game recap from yesterday, Sunday's game, in which the Rockets improved to 3-0, you can find that on Locked On Rockets as well. Again, I'm Ben DuBose of Sports Talk 790. You can find me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. You can always email the show at lockedonrockets@gmail.com. with any sponsorship inquiries or questions you might have for me. I would also point out that it's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. That's also the home of Locked On Texans, hosted by Robert Land and the Houston Chronicle's Aaron Wilson. They've got a great product talking about what's going on with the Texans this week. Whole heck of a lot as they get geared up for a big Sunday night showdown against Indianapolis. So if you want to hear more football, that's a good option for you as well. Anyway, thanks to all of you for listening, and I'll be back with you again very soon to talk about the Rockets and the Pelicans.